Welcome to Gardening Naturally with Jeff Ferris. Call or text Jeff now with your gardening and landscape questions. 512-836-0590.
Hey, good morning, gardeners. You may be waking up to wet ground. That's good. That's good. And rain is always good. Some of you got, you know, a little more than half an inch. That's what I got. I got just a hair more than half an inch. But if you're out in the Giddings area, the map shows something like 4.8 inches. That's a lot of rain. I hope you all are all right out there. That is a lot of rain. But most of the area, somewhere around an inch, and kind of equal fall. We needed that, of course, to help with the drought conditions, but that's what's also in the north northwest watersheds. So hopefully we're going to see the lakes rise a little bit. Now, it's not going to like rise up to full, but it is really low, so the rain will start coming up. Now, if you're paying attention to this or you wish to know more about things like where did it rain and what watershed did it rain in and where are we going to see lake rises or not, there is a wonderful, wonderful website. You can search for LCRA, Lower Colorado River Authority, LCRA Hydromet. They basically monitor rainfall and stream flow and lake levels and everything about the water in Central Texas. And it lists the basins. The basin is where water falls. Where does it drain to? And we didn't do particularly good last night for our Central Texas water basins. Most of them got something, but not some noticeable severe amount. But the basins all drain to the various rivers, and the rivers drain to the lakes. So that's where you can really see and follow where the lakes are rising, where the lakes are falling, where rain is contributing or flooding. It is a great, great website to just go to and say, all right, what's going on here? And keeping yourself informed about the water. Now, what are we doing today? Well, I got enough rain that, gee, I won't be able to mow the lawn today. Although it may be a beautiful day for it. The grass is going to be way too wet. But tomorrow should be a good day. We aren't looking at having rain tomorrow, hopefully. Or the risk of rain is so low. But if you haven't noticed, it's chilly out there. Yeah, the high for today is only listed at 67. Wow, that's pretty nice. I mean, throw on a jacket and go outside and enjoy the sun. However, tonight the low is listed as low as 49 degrees. Wow, that's chilly. Is it cover plant chili? Probably not. Some of you folks in outlying areas, maybe you want to keep go look and see what they're going to report for weather where you're at and see if, wow, are we going to drop below that 45 degrees? Because if you are, you want to cover up those tomatoes that are growing. Low temperatures can stunt their growth. So you want to try your best to keep them above 45 degrees. Can't believe here we're almost in May and we're having to still cover our tomatoes. Oh, well, I'm getting quite lucky with my tomatoes. They're growing something fierce. Got quite a few tomatoes on the bracts, too. I always want my tomatoes to come in such a way that I can cut off an entire bract at one time and all the tomatoes on it be ripe. Well, that's not really how they grow. Now, you see that in the grocery store, right? That's not uncommon in a grocery store where they say, ripen down the vine. No, they didn't. You get perfect tomatoes all on the same vine, about a half a dozen at once. They were gassed. Yeah, that's what they do. They cut them when they're not quite, they're just showing some blush. That means they're really pretty green. They bring them to a warehouse and they flood the warehouse with a gas, ethylene. I think it's just ethylene gas. And what happens is that encourages ripening. Now, the ripeness of a tomato is not 100% based on the color. It is a huge factor, and it's an indicator to tell you when you can pick the tomato. But they bring all of these tomatoes in on these vines, and they basically gas them. They get them to be the color of red they want, and then they ship them off to stores. And that's what you get when you go into a grocery store and you see ripened on the vine. Okay, they weren't ripe when they picked them. They were ripe after they flooded them with the ethylene gas. Now, you can also do that all on your own. You can take like a dry cleaning bag and put it over your tomatoes. Have it touch the ground completely over the tomato, and you could put like a rotting apple, cut an apple in half, put it on the bottom next to the tomato when you've covered it with a bag. That apple is going to release ethylene gas as it decomposes. And the ethylene gas will help your tomatoes ripen up. I think that's a lot of work. I want ripe red tomatoes too, but I just leave them on the vine till they're ready. That way I get good tomatoes, and I don't have to mess with the dry cleaner bag or special sliced up fruit rotting underneath. Just let them ripen on the vine. Sounds like we got a ways to go before we're going to be seeing ripe tomatoes, but keep your fingers crossed. Folks, this is Gardening Naturally. I got to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
This is Gardening Naturally on News Radio KLBJ with host Jeff Ferris. Jeff is ready for your calls or text messages at 512-836-0590.
Hey, welcome back, folks. Let's go to the phone. This is Paul. Paul, what can I help you with?
Hi, good morning, Jeff. Great rain last night.
Yes. Yes, it was.
I've got a question about BT. I was watching some YouTube videos last night about squash vine borers. This one fellow mixed up a solution of BT and used a syringe and injected it into the vine toward the base of the plant. Is that something you would do?
No. Now, let me phrase that carefully. Yes, I used to do that. Yes, it would work in killing the boar. The problem is, do you know how much you have to do that? I mean, if you only got...
It looked like work.
Yeah, if you only had one squash plant, maybe. But again, squash, at the time you're growing it, is also the cheapest it can be at a farmer's market. You know, do you want to go do that? Now, I know somebody who tried to invent a device. They worked on it really hard, where it was like a stick, and at the end of the stick was a syringe, and you could put the stick in the vine of the squash, and a button at the top would let you push and squirt BT into the vine. So you didn't have to bend over. The problem was is that they couldn't keep the syringe clear. It kept getting jammed with pieces of the vine. But yes, what they show on YouTube will work. The issue is the amount of work that you would have to do for something that, you know, if you just want to make sure that you get squashes, go for it. But
okay, thanks for your advice. I appreciate it. You have a good day.
Yeah, you too. Thanks for the call, Paul. Yeah, squash vine borer is the curse. Squashes are all victims of squash vine borer. Some are more resistant than others. But the amount of work you may have to go to, I know people that will cover their squashes. Wow, that's good, because you can't get that moth can't land on it, lay eggs, and put a borer in your squash. However, bees can't pollinate your squash. So you got to go out there and be the pollinator. So now you're taking over the job of the bee, and they're busy. And to get good squash, you really need to pollinate at a certain time of the day. You can't just go out there when you think of it. And people put paper cup around the vine. I grew my squashes on trellises, 8-foot tall trellis. And at the 8-foot mark, I would get squash vine borers growing into the vine. I built a cover, 4-foot by 8-foot, about 4-foot high. And I covered the whole thing with window screen material. Nothing bad could get through that to get to the squash, except for the fact that the bees couldn't pollinate the squash. So, no, you want to try to grow squash, go for it. Just understand it is rare to be able to go a whole season and not be hit with a squash vine borer. Is it impossible? No. But the average person is going to wind up losing their squash to the borer. There's a million suggestions on how to prevent that, and every one of them has a 50-50 chance. And you're going to all this work for something that will be at its lowest price and freshest condition if you just go to the farmer's market and get it. You don't have to go to the work to grow it. I know. Some people are like, I am not letting this bug defeat me. And they just got to grow their zucchini, acorn squash, yellow squash, whatever. They just got to grow it in their garden. Well, good for you and good luck. it is always frustrating. And you can't alternate. Let's say you grow some this year and then you don't grow any next year. And then you go back to growing again. Guess what? Squash vine borer is still there. When we put in a community garden in Round Rock, there was more than half a mile all the way around us before you could see another garden. So nobody was growing things within half a mile of our gardens. And the very first year, some of the folks started taking plots and farming them or gardening in them. People were putting in squashes. And guess what? We got squash vine borer. And like I said, there was nothing within half a mile of us that was a garden. It is a cost-benefit analysis. What is it costing you? Time, labor, all the efforts you go to, so you can grow your own squash, that you can get great squash, good condition, looks good, tastes good from a farmer's market. Your choice. It is totally your choice. Folks, this is Gardening Naturally. Bottom of the hour, we got to take a break for the news. We'll be right back.
This is Gardening Naturally on News Radio KLBJ with host Jeff Ferris. Jeff is ready for your calls or text messages at 512-836-0590.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Listen, I do want to talk about something because I'm getting more and more questions about it. Are we going to have a cicada apocalypse? No. Yeah, I know. The press loves to inflame us. Oh my gosh, we're going to have a bazillion cicadas. No, we're not. If you look at the distribution maps where they are expecting truly heavy cicada appearances, we're really not on that map. Now, that doesn't mean we're not going to get any cicadas. We always get cicadas. They're normal and natural here in Central Texas. But we're not going to get this apocalyptic view of all these insects. And for the most part, the cicadas are going to pupate out of the ground, shed that skin, shell, whatever. You're going to find a bunch of those all over the place. And they're going to fly up into trees and plants and stuff like that and make it a terrible noise. And that's about it. So worst problems we'll generally have with cicadas is if you like to sleep with your windows open, that may be difficult because they'll be loud. And the other problem is if you have a dog, the dogs love to go out and eat them, come in the house and throw them back up. Same with June bugs. So there is no panic to be had because of the cicadas. Everybody, it was like that Dairy Queen sign during the April 8th eclipse. It said, it's an eclipse, not the apocalypse. We're going to get cicadas. Yep, but we always do. And we're not going to suddenly be knee deep in them. So they're not the damaging disaster you might think they are. They are annoying, yeah. I am more concerned that once the cicadas show up, their predator also shows up. There is, I believe that technically it's a wasp called a cicada killer. Now, imagine your big old mud dauber, right? That orange wasp that you see, and make it about 10 to 20% larger, and that's a cicada killer. Now, cicada killers fly around and look for cicadas. They stab them, which paralyzes them. They dig a hole, drag the cicada into the hole, and lay eggs on it. That's a great way to die, isn't it? They're the ones out there killing the cicadas. That's why they have the name cicada killer. The only issue with them is they can pack a sting. Okay? So they normally won't bother you. They will kind of freak you out because, like I said, they are a large wasp. But if you don't bother them, they'll be fine. They're not going to go after you. And the sting will definitely get your attention, but it's not the worst thing in the world that could happen to you. So we've spiced this up that, oh my gosh, we're going to have cicadas so deep we won't be able to walk. Nah, no, we won't. We won't. Our part of the world will get some cicadas, yes, we always do, but it's not going to be the disaster they have been talking about in the press. So we generally don't have to worry about it. And I got to ask this question, and it's legitimate. Are the cicadas edible? No idea. No idea. Now, it's possible they make flour out of the cicadas. We'll not go into those discussions, but I have no idea if cicadas are edible. And I'm sorry, they're kind of creepy looking. That would be something really difficult for me to eat. Now, let's see, what other texts do we have here? Oh, with the rain that we've had and the cooler mornings now, we may see some turf diseases. If you get brown patch, brown patch affects the leaves of the grass, not the roots, not the runners of St. Augustine, just the leaves of the grass. It tends to be because the area is staying wet. You can use plain corn meal, not corn gluten, but plain corn meal. Go to your local grocery store and pick up a bag of it. It is 2 pounds covering 100 square feet. Just shake it out and sprinkle it there. It will produce a fungus that will attack the brown patch. That's pretty cool, isn't it? That's probably the cheapest solution to a grass problem you'll ever come to. Sprinkle it with cornmeal. There's also diseases called rust. It'll make an orangish color to the turf. And it's not that the turf's missing water, it's that it's got this disease. You can also use the cornmeal on the rust as a way to try to return your turf to green. So expect disease right now. The humidity, the fog, the rain, the cooler temperatures, and man, those diseases are just looking for an opportunity. Let's not get all excited about them. Most of the time, they're easily controlled. So prepare for some of this. You know, we always talk about when you water your plants, you water the ground, not the plant, because getting water on the plant, water does not cause diseases. But the water provides one of the necessary things that diseases need to thrive. Food, water, shelter. Guess what? The leaves of a plant are the food. The water is providing the environment for the disease to grow. And a lot of times some of these diseases infect from the underside of the leaf. With no sun shining on it, the disease is not going to get killed by UV light. So we should be expecting to see a little more of that with these weather conditions. Simple baking soda sprays can really make a difference on your plants. Neem oil can be effective at preventing the spread of some of these diseases. And there are organic listed products that are very effective using certain bacteria to fight the fungal diseases. Don't get excited if you start seeing spots you don't like. That's not at all abnormal. It's not at all abnormal. The weather conditions have been perfect for these diseases to take off. Folks, this is Gardening Naturally. I got to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
This is Gardening Naturally on News Radio KLBJ with host Jeff Ferris. Jeff is ready for your calls or text messages at 512-836-0590.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. I'm getting some texts. I've been getting these for a couple of weeks now. And people are seeing the woolly bear caterpillars. You know, those little fuzzy ones, they're black or brown. They may even be black and brown striped, but they look furry. And they're, inch and a half long. And they seem to move pretty quickly. They kind of boogie right along when they're traveling through your property. They are not a serious pest. They're not going to start chewing everything to the ground. Nope. They are just existing. Usually, they make an actually fairly attractive moth. One example is the leopard moth. It's all white with black spots. Very good looking moth, but it is not something you need to worry about in your garden, wildflower meadows, things like that. They do eat stuff. They do, but they are not a serious impact on anything you're growing. Yes, there's a zillion old wives' tales about how many stripes it has to tell you when spring is coming or whether we're going to have a bad winter. No, I have no idea. But don't worry about them. You're going to see them everywhere. You can watch them run across the streets. And they don't waste any time. They get out of your way in a hurry. If you bump one, touch one, if you want to pick it up to move it, they'll probably curl up into this little fuzzy ball. They are not going to sting or bite. They're not poisonous. So, yeah, enjoy them. Race them. They are really pretty quick. And no big deal, okay? There are plenty of pests that we really need to pay attention to. But this isn't one. This isn't one. So don't waste your time on it. There may be a lot of them out, too. Sometimes you see just one or two, and sometimes you get a whole bunch of them. Oh, this weather is going to do something, too. You're going to see an outburst of mushrooms. Mushrooms are the fruiting body of a fungus. What it means is that where mushrooms are coming up, you have organic matter in the soil under and around the mushroom. And the mushroom is blooming, coming up, sticking its head up, because that organic matter is being broken down by the fungus. That's exactly what we want. There are all kinds of mushrooms. Never, never, never eat one unless you have a true expert there. True expert to tell you that it is one you can eat. It is really easy to eat one and go, oh, that was not what I wanted to have, and it can affect you pretty seriously. Now, you're probably going to see one in your flower pot, maybe on the ground too, but it tends to show up in flower pots. And it has the lovely name of the dog vomit fungus. Seriously, it's going to look like a blob of dog vomit. And sometimes they turn orange. Sometimes they turn orangish. And then they will dry out and burst and release all these little black spores. The only thing with the spores is you may get an allergic reaction. You don't want to go and snip them. You don't want to actually stick your nose down there and try to smell them. But for the most part, most of the mushrooms we have are beneficial. They're just the fungus breaking down organic matter and turning it into good soil. If you're lucky enough, you may get a fairy ring. That will be a ring of mushrooms anywhere from 2 foot diameter to 15 foot diameter. Mushrooms growing in a circle. And get pictures of that, because there is lots of ancient writings about the fairy ring. It's just the same thing. It's just a handful of mushrooms. Fungus is growing all in the same place, and they happen to make a circle. They tend to show up around dead tree stumps because the roots are decomposing or being decomposed by fungi, and that's where the mushrooms are coming from. You should avoid your dog eating them. It can make the dog sick. So if you've got a bunch of these mushrooms in your garden and you don't have a dog, leave them. If you really don't like the idea of them, pull them up, throw them away. It's not a big deal. But we're going to see a lot of them this week because temperatures and amount of moisture, yeah, they'll be going crazy. And that's just what we get here under these environmental conditions. It's going to be a pretty awesome week to be gardening. Projected temperatures are just beautiful. Really good tomato weather. So keep an eye on your tomatoes and see if they don't really take off during this week. With these temperatures and the rain that we've gotten, I'm looking forward to getting to eat a nice big slicer tomato. Folks, this is Gardening Naturally. I gotta take a break for the news at the top of the hour. I'll catch you on the other side.